familiar territory, and he heads north, well into what is today Lebanon. And what follows that we read this morning, while we are today shocked by Jesus' harsh words to a pleading mother, calling her and her daughter dogs, early Christians would have found the healing of a foreign pagan child far more shocking than Jesus' words. That, together with this pagan woman's intrusion into Jesus' space, even going so far as to touch him, Jesus' instinctive response is to take refuge in the limits of his mission, his call to serve his own people. We find Jesus' attitude troubling and in sharp contrast with our assumptions about him. But something in Jesus' heart and mind and his understanding of a plan that is shaping his life is opened up by the tenacity and the power of this woman's mother love. As Holden Caulfield says in Salinger's novel, Catcher in the Rye, mothers are all slightly insane. And so here it becomes apparent. The tables are going to be turned, or maybe put right in the reign of God. As all foods are declared clean, so it would now seem are all people. The alarming prospect that gender, religious identity, and social status no longer decide who sits where is now before us. What follows immediately on this scene in Mark's typically breathless fashion is another story of being opened up. In this case, the healing of a man who can't hear. While the man's ears are opened, and Jesus' word, ephphatha, literally means be opened, it's the reaction of Jesus' astounded audience that captures even more powerfully what it means to have one's eyes and ears finally opened to God. In their utter astonishment at witnessing another way of ordering the world, one that heals and that opens things up, we discover where the real miracle lies in this story. The second feeding of a hungry crowd that follows in chapter 8, this time a crowd made up of Gentiles, not only bookends the earlier one among Jews in chapter 6, it also shows how Jesus follows up the Syrophoenician woman's words about crumbs from the table with real food for a hungry crowd of non-Jews. Having declared all foods clean, Jesus, with a Gentile woman's help, in effect declares all people clean, and then follows up words with action. He follows through his astounding and miraculous words with miraculous actions, healing outsiders and feeding a crowd without any apparent concern about food laws or purity codes. Transformative words and actions together, a powerful combination. For churches in our divided and divisive society today, where the demarcation lines are less obvious than those drawn around food laws and purity codes, we nevertheless live in a world equipped with equally effective ways to delineate the insiders and the outsiders. And the response to anyone seeking to dismantle those divisions today is, if anything, even more virulent than that of the Pharisees confronting Jesus. God's reign is neither easily regulated nor parceled out in socially appropriate ways. It has a tendency to burst the seams. It's not earned. We are not worthy of it by virtue of birth, by virtue of our identity, our education, our position, our status. Thank God. Thank God for this tenacious Syrophoenician woman, this theologian. Her theology doesn't originate in books or in study. It arises from painfully experienced need and fierce motherly love. This nameless woman's persistence persuades Jesus to do new things in ministry that will have an impact far beyond this woman's own little girl. To this day, in fact, faith can transform the world, but the world can also transform faith. The Syrophoenician mother is sitting in church here this morning, nervously, but also with determination. She may be one of those who slip out during the last hymn to avoid having to mix with others who seem to fit in more, but she keeps coming back, fiercely convinced that if anything I preach week in and week out is true, then it's got to be true for her too. But she gets inside our comfort zone, and she knows it. Mark's gospel does that all the time, in fact, the way it tells the story of Jesus. It reminds me of a recording I have of Bach's suites for cello, recorded in a church in Amsterdam with a microphone so tight in on the musician that amidst the harmonics and the reverb of the stone sanctuary walls, you can hear the cellist breathing with the effort of bowing, like Glenn Gould humming at the keyboard. Something similar is at work as Mark records the life and ministry of Jesus, placing the microphone so close to the action, perhaps too close for some. But along with Jesus' teaching and activities, his parables and miracles, Mark captures the raw physicality of the scene. We hear the tone of anger rise in Jesus' voice. We hear him heave a groan when he heals a deaf man, and a deep sigh when he confronts the Pharisees. And when Jesus responds to the Syrophoenician mother that the time is not right, that we need to take things step by step, beginning with the Jewish people first and then seeing what else might be done. The microphone picks up a whisper that sounds familiar to our modern ears today. We see it all the time at the intersection of social media and what feels like a growing number of tragic situations in our world that are brought up close and personal and inside our comfort zones on our smartphone screens. We feel pressured to respond. But what do we say when we actually feel quite helpless and overwhelmed? Thoughts and prayers. A random mass shooting on the Danforth on a summer's evening. A hockey team on a bus on the frigid prairie struck by a transport truck. A child's life taken by cancer, wildfires wreaking havoc across BC. Thoughts and prayers. We're caught. We don't know what to do, but you feel the pressure to do or preferably say something, staying in our comfort zone. I've done it. We've all been there. It's awkward. Jesus has his thoughts and prayers moment, trying to fend off a tenacious, unclean Gentile woman when he is far from his familiar surroundings and his people, out of water. She crowds his space the way smartphones crowd ours. She brings her personal tragedy and sticks it in his face, and he tries to send her away. I'd like to help, but the thing is, she refuses to take the hint. She's not satisfied with thoughts and prayers. She can't afford to wait. She doesn't want or need to sit at the same table. She doesn't need the full meal deal. She's okay with the scraps. She's insistent. She demands attention. It's all wrong, but she doesn't get it. And it all makes Jesus angry and dismissive until something falls into place for him. We don't know exactly what that was, but it was clearly transformative because he follows up that realization with action. No more thoughts and prayers. Go home. The demon is gone. One of those church words that some churches overuse and others tend to avoid is salvation. It has all kinds of associations in people's minds, but for many, it retains very little in the way of meaning anymore, or else the meaning is so weighed down with sin and guilt and death. But the word in the Greek that the Gospels were written in and the Latin that gave us our English word comes from the word for health. It means to be whole, to be integrated. When Jesus heals people in the Gospels, he tells them literally to go, be whole, be well, be healthy, be saved. The church has turned the word into a complex sort of spiritual calculus. But the spiritual fundamental meaning of salvation is very earthy. It's about the healing of persons like the woman's daughter and the deaf man in ways that cut across comfort zones and social norms and distance. It's about reintegrating divided selves and communities. It's about reuniting of people from whom they are estranged and families. It's about equipping us for the kind of life that God had in mind when God created life in the first place, in all its fullness and abundance, a new creation that we now enter together. For churches in our divided and divisive society today, there's nothing more radical, nothing more transformative than to go beyond thoughts and prayers, to allow ourselves to be pushed outside our comfort zone, to bring salvation to a world hungry, hungry still for healing and for wholeness, for community that breaks down social conventions and brings us all into God's new creation. And because I know you're curious, in the late first century, Pope Clement I, who is the fourth pope or bishop of Rome, let out a secret in the course of a sermon that has survived to this day. He identified the Syrophoenician woman's name as Justa and her daughter as Berenice. Justa and Berenice are proof that faith can transform the world, but the world can also transform faith. Thanks be to God.